You're listening to the No Labels, No Limits podcast with best-selling author Sarah Box, where you get the inside scoop on the steps action takers and decision makers take to align their purpose to their principles and achieve their goals in business and life. We focus on the mantra, no labels, no limits, no excuses. And now, without further ado, please welcome your commanding coach with plenty of chutzpah and heart, Sarah Box.
Hey there, everybody. I want to take just a minute out of this episode of the No Labels, No Limits podcast to tell you that we are officially opening the Sandbox membership in September. So if you're not already on our mailing list, please click the link below to either sign up for the membership or get on the waiting list for the membership. And if you click the link, you'll find more information about what's included, what our plans are, and better yet, you'll be on early enough to help decide what is most important to you to experience in the first 3 to 6 months of the membership. So don't wait, click the link below and join us in the sandbox where fun happens. We get to do a little R&R, little learning, support one another, and really grow and expand in ourselves, in our lives, and impact the world in a profound way. So come on over, join us. Hey there, this is Sarah, your host of the No Labels, No Limits podcast, all about shedding our limiting labels and beliefs. Why? So that we can live true to who we were meant to be and leave a positive ripple effect and impact in the world. So with that, I want to just tell you this episode is a little bit different. I get to hang out with my pal, Maria Lees, who is our team writer, all around great person and super inquisitive. So today we're talking about the topic of staying true. And what we're going to talk about are things around identity, what role that plays in our growth and journey, both in life in general and business. We're going to talk about that. She's going to come up with some questions around what staying true means. And then we jump on and talk a little bit about imposter syndrome, which is not an unfamiliar word to so many of us. But we're going to get a little bit deeper and talk about what causes someone to struggle with that, and not just on the individual level, but at an organization level, how that might show up and what the impact of that is within an organization. Now, Maria is the conductor of our conversation, so I'm not actually sure where it's going to go. I just know there's a general theme. So I hope that you enjoy our conversation. We'd love to hear back from you and let us know.
Okay, well, hi, Sarah. Today, I'm so excited to be talking with you specifically about a topic that is kind of it's like a little trendy right now. I feel like it's a buzzworthy topic, but I would like to go into it at maybe a little more depth than we see a lot of times in, you know, you'll see it on social media, you'll see it different places, but I think there's an opportunity for a real in-depth discussion that is actually helpful and an important one for us to discuss, and that is identity. So specifically, I'd love if we could start with what role you see identity playing in a person's journey, like in their growth journey, whether it's personal or it's in business. What role does identity play in that?
I actually think that identity at the personal level is the foundation, because we can show up in business and put on a will and put on an identity that's not true to who we are. So if we don't know who we are, then that just carries forward, right? And we can find ourselves in uncomfortable situations that we know, like we can connect, we'll know mentally, spiritually, physically, like we're out of sync with ourselves, right? So to get back to your question about what role does it play on a growth journey in life or business? I would just say, let's start with life first, and we can talk about how that spills over into business. I've certainly had my share of experiences where I ignored like what I knew at the moment and just carried forward. And, you know, different experiences, you learn from it all. But at the core, our identity really forms a basis for us, right? It's our sense of self. It shapes our actions, our decisions, and then how we with other people, because we've got a sense of who we are and we know who we are. So, you know, that spills over into all sorts of areas like our personal development, right? So if I understand who I am and I know what my beliefs are, what my values are, what my strengths and weaknesses are, although I'm not sure those form my identity, those form kind of like the external world expression, perhaps. But that all allows me and others to make really purposeful choices, and we can pursue self-improvement if we stay under the personal development piece of it. But, you know, also knowing who we are helps us have resilience during challenging times, and we are able to more easily adapt because we know we can come back to center to who we are. We're not lost in a storm kind of out at sea, if you will. And I think one of the most helpful things in knowing who you are is it does help you make decisions, right? So if you know who you are, it will shape the priorities you set and the choices you make. And that flows over into business too. If your company has a strong sense of identity and you know that that encompasses what you're about, your mission, your values, all of that, it will guide your strategic decisions. But if you're running a company or you're started a company, if it's too different from you, those things get out of whack. So, and there are other areas, Marie. I'm not sure what else you would like to chat about on that piece.
Yeah, I like how you started with identity is the foundation. I think I couldn't agree more. It really is like an anchor that holds us in all things, whether it's decision-making, whether it's, you know, navigating challenging situations or just new situations, kind of like we've discussed in the past, you know, navigating change and transition, like having a solid sense of identity is so helpful in that, helpful in relationships.
It is. I think it can really help you foster creativity too, right? You know that it doesn't, we're told how things have to be, right? But when you know who you are, it's just like going, I don't think it has to be that way. I think there are other ways. And if I can reach out and I have that growth mindset, right? I want to learn and learn from others while I maintain who I am at my core, you know, because my personal belief is we are very unique, all of us, but we are so much better when we come together. You know, it's like we just create this momentum of creativity and we don't all want to be the same.
Right.
So I think knowing who you are really helps you relax more in the moment because you know you're not going to be obliterated. And honestly, we have a strong sense of self-survival. We don't want to be obliterated, whether it's on the metaphorical or physical plane, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say is the kind of the relationship between maintaining that sense of identity, staying true to yourself and who you truly are at the core, and personal development? Because I think there can be this idea, and I don't know that it's necessarily correct, but that personal development involves, you know, developing or changing you. And so how does that fit in with the concept of staying true to your identity and the importance of that?
Okay, let me think about that for a second, because that can be factual and still not true, right? So, okay, I am an acorn. I have in me, I was meant to be an oak, right? I have all the building blocks of being a great oak. But if you plant that acorn in the desert, I'm not going to flourish, right? So using that metaphor, which now I realize I may have painted myself into a corner, but we'll go with it. No matter what you do and how you nurture that acorn, as long as it stays where it is and believes that that's where it has to stay, it will never become the oak it was intended to be, right? So think about that little acorn getting personal development and becoming aware that I am not planted in the soil and location that best serves me, where I can grow and flourish and become this great, magnificent oak. So that awareness can actually open the acorns becoming more of who and what it was actually created to be, right? All the magical pieces inside that little acorn can flourish if it is in the right space. But as long as it believes that it's in the right space and it says, I have to live here in this arid desert, no water, no moisture, it won't evolve. So was that too far out in left field?
No, I actually like it. It's kind of like you're saying that pursuing personal development and whatever that looks like is actually helping us actualize and realize the more true sense of our identity, rather than somehow taking us away from our identity or evolving into somebody else.
As long as our reason for doing it isn't because we think we are inherently flawed, right? Like I have to keep doing this because I won't be a good person unless I do. It isn't about like fixing you because you're all broken. You're not broken. Right. Things can happen to us though in life that then our world starts getting really narrow, or we start thinking things are true about us that they're not true. Either we've been told that or we've conformed to believe that, and then we're constricted. So sometimes personal development is going, whoa, how long have I been carrying that belief around that just weighted me down, you know? And then once it's gone, you just see more of who you are.
Mm. When it comes to personal development, obviously I know that, you know, that's something that you practice in your own life. It's something that you walk with other people through. But are there specific personal development strategies or practices that you have found to be especially helpful for kind of developing that true sense of our identity?
Yes and no. I think there are, I will say on the person what works best for them, right? So there are tools, if you will, that can help kind of you explore. I mean, there are so many great authors and books who have tools about how to learn these things or how to go deeper. Clearly working with a therapist can open up some log jams for you. But again, it has to be where you are in your moment and the right fit. So that whole thing of like, just do this, whatever the 3 steps, 10 steps, whatever it is, and you'll find yourself and it'll all be well. That may be true, but it may not be true for you in this season of your life. So things that make sense to me today, had you told me that 20 or 30 years ago, I might have scratched my head and said, oh, that's so interesting. It wasn't timing for me to know that or learn from that at that moment, which is why that growth mindset, open and curious, is so important, because we don't know. We just don't know sometimes our best next step. So I hesitate to say this tool is perfect, but there are some good books that'll help, and certainly some people who like and are in a position to help guide some of that. And, you know, like you said, we do that in the coaching or in our groups kind of work. But it is not one size fits all. What does fit all is listening and paying attention to yourself. And so I think one of the best first steps is getting quiet. And, you know, here's where it'll come pushback. Getting quiet. Are you talking meditation? Sometimes. But I just heard this explained. I was at a workshop all weekend, and one of the best ways that this gal was talking about, she goes, it isn't about like getting still so that there's no chatter in your head. It's just thinking about the chatter as clouds that are in your blue sky, because you are the blue sky. Right. You know yourself, and you don't go looking at all the clouds and trying to figure out what to do with them. Just let them go by, but pay attention to what stands out, like what stands out. And then I heard a similar message today, different person. And she said, what's really helpful is just what pops when you're wondering about something. Like, did you have a thought? What popped there? You know, so just being quiet and observing. And I think you and I've talked about this before at another time, Maria, but it's that piece of noticing. So maybe you're going through a struggle without trying to analyze your struggle or define yourself using your struggle. Like, I'm this, right? Whatever it is, I'm in this situation. That means that's my story. is just observe the thoughts around that, but don't latch on to them. Don't use them to yourself or to others, because that starts to solidify it for you. But just observe and then be curious about what you're observing. And you can take some notes on it. But I just think that awareness and observing is one of the best first places to start, because it will lead you to other places.
I think that's so true. And learning how to observe and really listen to ourselves, it's kind of an art. You know, it's not something that, I don't know, at least for me, it's taken practice. Learning how to actually pay attention and listen to those interior voices and what they're saying, and you know,
well, we're trained away from that. If you think about it, right? When we're little, you know, I remember being, you know, 4 or 5, right? I don't remember being as young as Emmy, but I remember being 4 or 5, and I had 2 younger siblings, and then a nephew that lived with us. I became other focused, right? Because I, you know, it's like I was older, so I'm helping to care for them. So you become other focused and you start paying attention to what others need. Well, just slowly but surely, you start not worrying about yourself as much. Now, that's not a bad or good thing, but we start training away from our inner knowing, our inner voices as little kids. Because I'll bet you, your 2 toddlers, they're not too worried about, oh, did we take care of Emmy today, Mom? You know, it's like they're into being their kid selves.
Exactly.
Right. So, and we all have that sense. I think we just get trained away from it. And then we go to school and we're trained on other things. And then we go to work and yet we're trained on other things. So, and now, like, there's all these other distractions that say, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. So I think that's the difficulty, is kind of starting to quiet that noise so that you can hear that voice that's inside of all of us, that, you know, that just like, hi, I'm here. I'm with you all always. But did I answer your question?
No, I think you did. I think you did. So kind of shifting just a bit, I'd love to hear, when it comes to maybe achievement, what role does identity play in that, in pursuing goals and achievement?
Oh, so interesting. So, you know, the yin yang symbol, you know, the black, the white dot, and I think it plays that kind of a role. So identity is great until you are over identified with your achievements. So I think if we have a strong sense of self, we can go out there and we can achieve, and we'll have these goals and they'll be interesting to us, and we will contribute to our own path and then benefit other people along the way, perhaps depending upon the path we take. But when we become over identified with that role, then we start to lose ourselves again, right? Because who am I if I am not that output or that achievement?
Right. Yeah, it's almost like we take these outward achievements, or, you know, things, checklists, boxes, and we put them on ourselves of, this is who I am. And it's more of a, this is something I have done. This is not who I am as a person. But
that's,
it's easy.
Perfect.
That's the fine line that is difficult for a lot of us to stay on the right side of.
Well, isn't that, that becomes an interesting question when people ask me, like, what do you do? I don't want to be sarcastic, but I'm thinking, I don't know. I do a lot of different stuff, right? Because I know the purpose is trying to connect with me and trying to find something out about me. But what I am, what I do is sometimes an expression of who I am. And when I'm happiest, it's the full expression of who I am. But it's not always, you know, I'm not always just a great dishwasher, even though I love to do that. So, so I think if we over-identify with our outputs, if you will, then we forget what's actually fueling that. It's our identity and who we are at our core that is shaping and shading how we show up.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting because I think when it comes to achievement, there's kind of, there's a couple different approaches that often we fall into. And one of them is exactly what you're talking about. It's, you know, identifying too much as our achievements. And then I think that there's the flip side. It's kind of the imposter syndrome side where we don't believe that we're capable of achievement. You know, how would you speak into that? How would you define imposter syndrome?
I think you just did. It's not believing in your own abilities and accomplishments, right? Or fearing that you're not as competent or scared as competent or skilled as someone else. So depending on your environment, that could be, if I'm with you and I've got kids, I could look at you and go, oh man, Maria's got this whole mothering thing down, right? I'm not as good as her, right? I'm not as good a mother. Or in the workplace, you can start not believing you're as good as you are because you are looking to someone else, or you're waiting for permission or validation. I mean, there's a number of underlying things that could be behind that, obviously. But it's that whole sense of being a fraud and not good enough. And I see it all the time when I'm coaching people. And I check myself for it, right? Like you can hear it in your head, like I'll do this as soon as I X, as soon as I know more, as soon as I've gone further on this. And that's when you have those heart-to-hearts with yourself and you say, Sarah, my friend, if you knew that today, would you be any closer to making the decision you need to make than you are right now? No, I would just feel more secure and make your decision now, right? You have to catch yourself in that. Sometimes you need someone else to point it out for you because we are buried in our stories of our limitations.
Mm. Yeah. And it's so easy to come up with that checklist of things like, oh, I can't do this until I've done this, or, you know, these are the requirements for me to be good enough for
whatever, you know,
whatever that next step is. Yeah. Instead of just realizing that nobody has a perfect resume for life, and that, you know, at some point.
Well, in a good example, this has been 5 or 6 years ago, I think. I was facilitating a group. The group's been together a while, but there was a new person, you know, and so you have this formed group and it's a fair amount, you know, it's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, you get comfortable in the roles. This gal was new at her company. So she's new into the group, which is a mix of different organizations.
Yeah.
She's pretty young, you know, relatively young compared to the folks that are there. I'd say she's probably in her very early 20s. She was so brilliant, right? I'm watching her and she asked really good questions. And I said, come here, man, I got a question for you. I said, would you feel good facilitating this little breakout with me? And she goes, sure, right? No one told her she couldn't do it. And she was so good, Maria. But then I share with this other person later, I said, I think we should bring her back to do more of this. And this person said, well, you know, she doesn't have all these credentials and this and that. And I went, are you kidding me? She is so good. But I had to step back and go, okay, not my decision to make at this point. But I realized I'm glad that I was the buffer in between, because I would not have wanted her, the younger person, to have heard that, right? Mm-hmm. Because I just watched her bring this group together and be so at ease with it. So, you know, I think about, where does our imposter syndrome come from? She demonstrated none of it. She just stepped right up. She was enthusiastic. She was confident, you know, and I'm thinking, what do we do? Do we put stuff on other people? And I know I see it in organization. They can't do that because of this and that. And I'm thinking, I hope you don't have that thinking within the organization, because I'll bet there's a lot of talented people who are not showing up fully.
You know, that's an interesting question. Where does the imposter syndrome actually come from? Because what comes to my mind is, as you know, I've got 3 little kids, and, you know, my 2-year-old and my 4-year-old, they're not afraid of doing anything. Like, they think they're capable of everything, even things that
Wonder Woman.
Not ready yet for. And I think that's just natural and innate to children. It's so easy to see in children that little kids don't struggle with imposter syndrome at all. They just like believe that they can try things, and so they do. And sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't.
Oh,
they
yeah.
kind of have this blissful innocence approach to life. And somewhere along the line between being a 4-year-old and being an adult, many of us internalize those false beliefs that I can't do this because of X, Y, and Z. We become, you know, people who deal with imposter syndrome. And so it does make me wonder, okay, where are those voices coming from? Because it's not innate in us as people from right. the beginning. So somewhere we pick it up along the way.
Right. And it can come from a number of places, Maria. You know, if you think about it, and I'm thinking, I'm sorry, I just went in a different track, but I was thinking about your youngest child, right? So with your oldest child, you're a little more aware of everything she does because you're worried. You're a new mom and all this. So you're already worried about your own perfectionism as a mom, quote unquote, perfect. And I'm not speaking about you personally. But
it applies personally. I feel that.
Okay. Well, I'm just speaking in general of anybody who's new at something, right? We hold these standards. We want to be perfect because, and especially with a child, right? You don't want to risk harming them, right? So you worry more. And you're more protective. And then that standard or those, that focus of being more thoughtful and perfect. And I'm not sure that's the word I should be using, but we'll go with it for now. That kind of gets kids see it and they're thinking, okay, so I need to be good in this way. And we use words like good and all of that. But if you, as your children go and they get older, if your standards are too high, you know, I mean, obviously you want your kids to be good people. And I'm not saying what your family standards are, but whatever they are, if they are too high and unattainable and perfectionism is the only acceptable result, mm-hmm. it puts a lot of pressure on a kid, right? You know, you've heard of kids who they get a minus in school and they freak out because they wanted an A or above. So that's one way that we can start to take those on. Also, if we're constantly criticized for how we do something, so I was talking to a friend yesterday, we were talking about perfectionism, different conversation, but she says, oh, I know, I come in and my husband's made the bed, and she goes, the first thing I want to do is fix it. And I started laughing. She goes, I need it to be a special way because I like it that way when I get into it at night. And I go, what are you doing? She goes, I wait till bedtime at night and then I fix my side. But she goes, when my kids were growing up, once they started making their beds, I was proud of them because they knew the standard was they had to do that. And she goes, that's all I could do not to go in and fix it. I said, did you? She goes, no, I didn't do it because I just knew it. That's on them, right? They were proud of what they did. So those kind of can be squishy areas, right? Yeah. But if we're really critical of folks, whether it's in the job world or in our regular relationships, people start to doubt themselves, right? You do a job and someone goes, that's not how you should do it, or I would do it this way. So those are subtle things that can have an impact, especially if someone doesn't have a strong sense of who they are. It doesn't take that much to get someone to go, oh yeah, maybe I'm not good enough, right? Just those, that and then comparing yourself to other, which we talked about that. Also, if you don't know who you are, you really don't know how to validate yourself. So there's just a lot of little things mm-hmm. that can contribute to that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really good thing for, you know, all of us to keep in mind. And especially there's so many people in our community that are in a leadership role of some kind, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, within their organization, they, you know, maybe they're a CEO, they run a nonprofit, they're, you know, in some sort of corporate leadership, or even just in their families, you know, they're a parent, they're, you know, running some sort of volunteer organization. But we have so many leaders in our community. And I think it's really important for us, for all people, but especially people who find themselves in leadership roles, to really take a pause and think about the impact of our words and actions in the lives of other people and what we might be speaking unintentionally. In the little, like tiny little comments that we say.
Yeah. Or even the look, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have to say much because I've been told many times, you really don't have much of a facial filter. I go, what do you mean? Well, you know, people who know me well know what they can intuit pretty much. It's partly an energy thing, I think, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We can inadvertently communicate. And that's one of the powers of being aware of yourself first, right? So if you're irritated with something, it might not be the best time to say you're going to have a quote-unquote honest conversation. because it's probably not the best time until you sort out your own stuff and make sure you're not bringing your stuff and placing it on other people.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I mean, that's just, I think, like, communication 101 thing of just pausing first and giving ourselves that space to really reflect before we correct and ask ourselves, you know, is this comment that I feel inclined to make right now justified, actually necessary, and helpful?
Those are powerful. Okay, let's think about words. Those are all really powerful. And is there a reason to even say this, right?
Yeah.
Is it helpful, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it more helpful if I just leave them alone and let them figure it out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just...
I think there are a lot of
opinion on everything. Yeah.
And certainly there are topics that need to be discussed and, you know, situations that you should have a conversation. You should address it, particularly in, you know, interpersonal relationships with people. But I think there are probably a lot more criticism remarks that are offered than truly needed.
Well, I don't. Yeah, that's a funny meme that says when I start out, or maybe it's a comic anyway, I don't mean this personally. Yes, they do. Right? It's all about you. So you have to, I really sometimes want to laugh when people say, I really don't want to hurt your feelings. Well, then stop talking, right? Because if you're really telling me something that's helpful for me, it won't hurt my feelings. If you're just telling me your opinion about me and how I'm falling short in your viewpoint, not helpful.
Right. Absolutely. Now, what about, so we've kind of talked a little bit about imposter syndrome on the personal level and just how individuals can deal with it. And so many of us do. I would say probably most of us do in one way or another. But what about on like kind of a bigger, grander scale? When it comes to an organization, how does imposter syndrome, the struggles associated with that, affect, you know, maybe a nonprofit or a business, you know, kind of a bigger scale thing?
I think where I've seen it is in the sense that in some places you'll have this clinging to the old ways of doing things, like that fixed mindset and a little bit of a resistance to trying something new or embracing new people that you bring onto the team. You know, the whole like, you haven't been here long enough to have an opinion. Yeah. I've actually heard those words come out of people's mouths. You got to be here 6 months before we take anything you say serious. So I think at an organization level, that can start to make an organization stale, right? In that sense of we've got to stay this way. So that's one area. It can also, for the folks inside the organization, start to create a little insecurity and fear of failure if there's going to be consequence trying something and maybe they don't come up to the level they thought they could, but
yeah.
But they just won't try anymore, right? It's like, nope, if I'm going to be punished, if you quote unquote punished, but if there's a downside for me trying something when I'm uncomfortable, then there's no reason to risk it, right? We'll just stay comfortable where we are. I'll be the best data entry person, even though I actually know how to code. I'm not going to risk it because if I'm not perfect, right? So I think at an organizational level, it can really stall creativity. Sometimes you don't even get into that sense of how do you problem solve then, because people don't want to just put themselves out there. And Maria, I know when you were teaching, did you ever notice like in a group when you guys were debriefing something, there'd be one or two people who didn't say very much, but in your gut, you're thinking, they actually have something we need to hear. And they're just able to share it for whatever mm-hmm. reason, right?
Mm-hmm. Always.
And, yeah, but those gems that come out, you're thinking, uh-huh. I'm glad someone asked that question to say, hey, Charlene, you know, what are you thinking over there? And didn't let it go, no, I'm good. You guys have covered it. Because there's that sense of, well, I just wasn't sure that I've been here long enough to have an opinion that matters, or I don't know as much as you guys. I don't have your credentials, whatever, right? So there's that can happen. And again, it goes back to that self-awareness. Or what are you picking up in the room if you're leading a conversation that is being left on the table unsaid?
Yeah. I think that's so easy to happen. And again, it just goes back to awareness, you know, awareness of our own identities, because it does take some strength to speak up and to share, especially if you're hearing those words come out of other people's mouths. You can't share yet because you haven't been here, you know, things like that.
Well, and it leads to a lack of ownership and accountability. I was talking, I know this sounds like I'm jumping these, but these things come to my mind. So there's a local restaurant and it has gone out of business. You know, it's had change of ownership probably over the last 10 years, four times within that, which is pretty quick. But the last time these new owners came in, and this place is now packed. And my husband goes there for breakfast with his buddies. And so we go there sometimes with the grandkids. But I realize when I'm in there, why it's so packed. I mean, their food is good. That's great. But the thing is, I can't tell who the managers are in there, because it feels like every staff person, whether they're at the front door, on the floor, bringing you your check, whatever, they all feel like they're responsible for the whole thing. And so I asked, I said, is that guy the manager? And my husband goes, no, he's not the manager. I said, who is he? He goes, he's looking. He goes, he's not here. And I'm thinking, but that's that whole thing like that. They all own it in a quote unquote sense. They all have ownership and accountability. I've never heard someone say, well, let me get your waiter. Never. You ask for something, they're right there with it. And so that's a mindset thing, that somewhere along the line, all of those folks were empowered, right? Even the newest people. And you can tell they're new because they're looking like for an answer they don't have. Someone will walk up right beside them and say, I'll show you, come on. So I think that's a big deal. The other thing when that's in an organization where people are nervous like that, they'll stay within their silo. Like I mentioned, I'll just stay with my data entry. But when you're in an organization that's responding to human need or serving a community, you do need cross-pollinization, and you need folks who are comfortable talking to folks in other functional areas of the organization so that it runs smoother and friction points. So it's really important. I think sometimes, as you mentioned at the top of this, Maria, that it gets talked about a lot, but the implications of it, of having either creating situations where people feel disempowered, or their already sense of about themselves that they are an imposter, if that gets reinforced, everybody misses out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just to kind of wrap things up, I'm curious, do you have any like quick or final tips for staying true to our identity or overcoming imposter syndrome? What would they be?
I would just say staying true to your identity is an ongoing thing, because we learn and grow. You know, throughout our lives, we put on different roles. We do different things. You know, we're students, we're parents, or, you know, we're in business, but the things that we do are not who we are. And I think sometimes remembering that it's an expression of who we are, but it's not all of who we are. So really trying to practice that dual awareness of what you are doing, but who is watching you do what you're doing, like that part of you at your core, and just trying to see what stands out, you know, and just that awareness. And pay attention and you'll become more and more aware. It's just a practice. And I am not expert at it, but I am dedicated to the practice of it.
Well, that is wonderful. Well, I have really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate all of the little nuggets of wisdom that you have shared with me today. I'm sure, hopefully, whoever gets to hear this will benefit from it as well.
I hope so. And for the folks who are listening, if you're watching, not just listening, Maria, her youngest child, won out today because Maria thought, oh, she'll nap. And right before we went, she goes, I'll be right back. I'm getting Emmy. So here's for being your true self, Emmy.
She's just a cuddle girl. She knows that that's who she is. She's happiest when she's snuggled.
Well, and really, her energy is so nice to have visually to just get to look at. So thanks for bringing her on board.
Oh, happy to. Anytime.
All right.
You've been listening to the No Labels, No Limits podcast with best-selling author, change agent, and strategic vision coach, Sarah Box. You can grab the show notes and find out how to work with Sarah at sarahbox.com/No Labels, No Limits podcast. We'd love this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So please remember to rate, leave a 5-star review, and share the podcast with someone you think would get value from this conversation. Until next time, keep taking those daily action steps to align your purpose to your principles and achieve your goals in business and life.